Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Picks, Knicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with your hosts, Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin.
Ah, yes. Welcome back to episode 5. I see welcome back, but I'm just assuming that they were with us and they've come back. So
well,
I will just say welcome. Yeah.
There's 4 other for you to check out.
Go grab them. This is Hicks, Knicks, Sticks, Picks. I'm Rob Spiewak, along with Josh Sroka.
I'm excited. We're 5 in. We've gone more than a month.
Did you think we would last this many?
I did. But
so
I think that people outside of you and I thought this would end after 2 episodes.
And Robert, my son, he's come around on the title. He hated the title and he likes it now. So it's okay.
I love the title. I did not care for the title at the beginning.
But
I thought it was
fine,
but now I think it's great. I love it.
I like when we're talking like the serious business of doing the podcast and you just refer to it as Hicks Knicks.
Well, yeah, because
you're being a cool guy.
It's too hard to say. It's not that it's hard to say. It's too long to say. And like the abbreviations HNSP,
that doesn't
look good either. So I just call it Hicks Knicks or Hicks.
I think that's pretty good. And this week is an exciting episode because we are in color. We were black and white last week. We're color this week. And you know you're in for a treat because I am wearing my Turner Classic Movies t-shirt. Thank you. Because this is truly a classic movie.
Well,
as
we
continue to celebrate.
Spooky season.
Spooky season. It's a new element. Every time we say spooky season.
Well, I am loving spooky season because I have avoided so many horror movies for my entire life.
Okay.
There's types of horror movies I love. Like the late 90s slasher style
like
horror movies.
And that,
I mean,
even
like
going back
Scream
to
style.
Okay, going back to the 80s then, when you
never
have the movies that like inspired Scream, like
never
the Friday the 13th or Halloween's or anything like that?
Them. No.
Wow, okay.
No, like I saw the late 90s, early 2000s genres of horror movies, and that's about it. I've avoided so many horror movies over the years.
The Screamiverse, I like very much.
Me too.
Liked the first Scream movies, and then they remade the Scream movies, and I liked those too. I'm not big on slasher films. I've seen them, but that's not my go-to for scary, because I think you can only do a jump scare so many times.
I enjoy, and you know what, and this falls right into Rosemary's Baby.
Okay.
Because of those modern horror movies, I love the Final Destination movies because it's full slow build suspense.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I felt with Rosemary's Baby
as
we get into that.
Well, let's discuss a little bit about this movie. Rosemary's Baby, 1968, from Paramount Pictures, directed by Roman Polanski, great director, bad guy, based on a book by Ira Levin. And it is a William Castle production. I'll get into William Castle a little bit as we go on through this.
I don't know who that is.
But longtime listeners of TMOS will know who William Castle is because he's been referenced many times. In the movie, we open with a beautiful sweeping shot of New York City. And we see a beautiful old school apartment building. Looks to be right by Central Park, which it is. And Guy and Rosemary Woodhouse, who are John Cassavetes and Mia Farrow, are apartment shopping. I think they're newlyweds. And they're shown a great but creepy apartment by Elisha Cook Jr. Or in this movie, he's just Elisha Cook. He's an amazing actor. He worked with Humphrey Bogart. He works steady through his entire life. But he's a great old school actor. So they see this apartment and it's got a secret closet. And that's sort of something they don't pay attention to, but it's mentioned.
No, but it's really trendy right now on TikTok to be like, I never knew this door was in my basement.
Oh, yeah, people do that. And this is hidden behind a huge piece of furniture. They call it a secretary, but I think actually it was a chest of drawers. Yeah, I would give it armoire. And they also find out that their place that they're moving into is called the Bramford, and it has an evil past. There's been cannibalism. There's been murders. And they find this out from their friend, Hutch, who is played by Maurice Evans. And this is, you won't know this, but in the 1966 Batman, Maurice Evans played one of the worst villains on Batman. He was the Puzzler.
Oh, the Puzzler is tough. I can't believe that's the first guy they go with for a TV show, for a movie.
What,
but
well, the, but, well, no, I mean, he's a better actor than he was as the Puzzler. But
yeah, the Puzzler's
what happened,
a poor option.
I think what happened with that, if I'm not mistaken, they had written a script for the Riddler, and they were in contract trouble with Frank Gorshin. So they rewrote it as the Puzzler. But despite these warnings, they move in anyway, and they have sex, which I know you mentioned, and they redecorate. And down in the laundry room of the Bramford, Rosemary meets another person who lives there. Her name is Terry, and they have a nice conversation down in the laundry room. And they talk, and it seems like Rosemary's finally made a friend, except it doesn't last very long. In the laundry room, Terry reveals that she's living with an old couple in the building named the Castavets, and they're sort of like parent figures to them. But soon thereafter, Terry is found dead of an apparent suicide outside of the Bramford. And while everyone is gathered around to see her body, that's when we actually meet the Castavets. And they are named.
And where we get to see the body.
Yeah, we do. They do show it. They do. Minnie and Roman, that's Sydney Blackmer, and an Academy Award winning nod to Ruth Gordon, who won Best Supporting for this movie. And they sort of strike up a conversation. And they decide to have dinner with the older couple. And Guy seems really taken with them, even though Rosemary's a little put off. And to thank Rosemary for saying nice things about them to the police when they found the murdered body, they give Rosemary a charm that has a weird-smelling herb in it called tannis. But it's identical to a charm that Terry was wearing. Very sort of peculiar. Now, Guy is an actor. That's his job.
Well,
and
hold
he's
on.
Most,
that-
yeah.
They told her that it was from Terry. The
okay.
charm they gave her was because she knew Terry.
Right, and she had left it before she
and
jumped.
She,
okay, I missed that detail. I'm sorry about that.
I believe she was wearing it when she jumped. They took it off her body and got her back from her and then proceeded to pass it on.
It's a cool necklace. It's like a globe, like maybe a sterling silver globe that had the tannis root in it. We find out Guy is an actor, and he's mostly making a living by doing ads for Yamaha motorcycles. But out of the blue, after a bad audition, Guy gets a call that the actor that he wanted the role of, the actor that got cast, is struck blind and can't do the play.
It instantly reminded me of The Natural, where it's like suddenly, he ran into a wall and killed himself. It's the same thing where it's like, how do we make this as seamless and as easy as possible? Okay, right. He goes blind.
So this comes back later. Meanwhile, they have decided to have a baby. The Woodhouses, Josh, are going to have a baby. And on the night they set aside for romance, Minnie Castavet shows up with chocolate mouse, as she calls it, for a dessert. And if you watch very carefully, they have different garnish on the top of the chocolate mousse to make sure they're not confused.
Right, and so you know which one is chalky.
Precisely. So they give it to them, and they eat it, and Guy loves it, and Rosemary says it does taste chalky. There's a chalky aftertaste, but she still eats a few good bites and then throws it away. And after that, she passes out. Like, almost immediately, she passes out. And the guy blames alcohol. Apparently, she had champagne and wine. Or something like, or a cocktail and wine. And she has this weird semi-conscious dream where there's a whole bunch of creepy people around her. And she is and among the people there is Guy. And this is a dream, sort of, I guess. And we don't really know if it's a dream yet. And
at least part of it's a dream because she's on a boat, off a boat, in a room.
Yeah. But
a room.
The whole,
yeah.
It results in her being raped by a guy with very scary eyes. And when she comes to...
And hairy hands.
And hairy hands. And when she comes to, she says, this happened. He says, no, that must have been some sort of hallucination.
About scratches.
And then she sees the scratches, and he says, oh, yeah, after you passed out, we had sex last night. By the way, not okay.
Right,
but
right.
That
there's
was
a problem
the
there.
That's a problem. I mean, it's like, this is a less important rape. This is not as bad as the first rape, but still, at this point, you got the point here that Guy is really self-centered. I mean, that's just one thing about him, that he likes to do things for him. So He says, yes, we made love last night. And so she goes to see the OBGYN, who is Charles Grodin as Dr. Hill, I think. And it's Charles Grodin's motion picture debut. And she is indeed pregnant. They announce it to the cast of Vets. They celebrate by drinking wine. Don't give wine to a pregnant lady.
Well, they didn't know this back then.
I guess.
But
I guess.
Maybe, do you think she was telling everyone, yeah, we were decided we wanted to have kids, and I got raped, so now I'm pregnant.
I was twice raped, and now I'm pregnant. Yeah. Exactly. The cast of Vets, who are very connected in New York, know the best doctor in New York City, the best OB. It's Dr. Saperstein. And they get her in to see him, and he goes through his recommendations for health, including like a smoothie that is made for Rosemary every day instead of vitamins. And these are made by the cast of Vets, these smoothies. Now, I don't know if it's the smoothies that are doing it or just the mood. Rosemary starts really changing. She cuts her hair severely. She says it's a Vidal Sassoon cut, but it definitely changes her look. She loses weight. She's eating almost raw meat. She puts a steak in a frying pan for like maybe 20 seconds and dines on it. And so she is, you know, absolutely changing. She actually eats a chicken heart, which is not great. And then it is
announced. But she goes in and out. Like, she wakes up kind of while eating that chicken heart and is disgusted that she's eaten that.
Yeah. But there's definitely changes afoot. They find out that Hutch, the guy who warned them about the building, has passed away and left a book for Rosemary. He mentions that there's anagrams in the book, and using a Scrabble set, Rosemary figures them out, and she even calls the actor that was struck blind, who was played by Tony Curtis, just his voice, and she begins to put together that Hutch and the blind actor were hexed. They were hexed somehow because these people met horrible ends. So Rosemary's very upset.
She's starting to put together that everything's going well for her husband, for God.
Exactly. So she is upset. She goes to Dr. Saperstein and realizes he smells like Tannis root too, the stuff that's in the charm. Yes. And she says, oh my God, he's into it. So she goes back to the original OB and he says, okay, we'll take care of you. Lay down, have a rest. And it's sort of like a, okay, we're going to resolve this. But who shows up but her husband and Dr. Saperstein? And they smuggle her back to their apartment. She escapes in the elevator, but she is caught and given a sedative. And while she's under, she gives birth. When she comes to, she says they tell her the baby didn't make it. And that being said, she's quite suspicious why they're collecting her breast milk. And also, I was suspicious why the entire building seems to be caring for her. We're seeing characters that we haven't even seen yet that are coming in and, you know, helping her out as the newborn's mother. So she's thinking about all this stuff going weird, and she goes back to that secret closet and finds a secret passage, and she goes into a room, and everybody's there. Guy and the cast of Vets.
So the passage
the whole coven
goes into the cast of Vets apartment.
Right.
Then, right?
Uh-huh. And everyone's there, including her baby, Adrian, who actually wasn't dead. He was actually just swooped away from her. And it is now clear that all of this went down because Guy sold his soul to the devil to be a success. The best scene, the most thrilling scene, I think, in the movie is the discovery of her baby. And let's take a look at that now. This is in the cast of Vets apartment. Looks in the bassinet. She does not like what she sees.
What have you done to it? What have you done to its eyes?
He has his father's eyes.
What are you talking about? Guy's eyes are normal. What have you done to him, you maniac?
Satan is his father, not Guy. He came up from hell and begat a son of mortal woman. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Satan is his father, and his name is Adrian. He shall overthrow the mighty and lay waste their temples. He shall redeem the despised and wreak vengeance in the name of the burned and the tortured. Hail Adrian!
Hail Adrian!
Hail Satan! Hail Satan!
He chose you out of all the world, out of all the women in the whole world. He chose you. He arranged things because he wanted you to be the mother of his only living son.
His power is stronger than stronger.
Hail Satan.
His might shall last longer than longer.
Hail Satan!
No! It can't be!
Oh, but it is. And so she's having a rotten day at that point.
Yeah. And I love that they do not show the baby.
There's a whole story behind that, and I'm glad you bring it up. But at that point, Mr. Castevet comes over and says, be a mother to this child. You don't have to join us. Just be a mother to this child. And that's one of the great, you know, she's torn because it's her baby, but it is the spawn of Satan. And we are left with Rosemary and Adrian and the coven, and she's just left there with her baby, ostensibly to raise the son of Satan, the end. So that's the movie in a nutshell. I'm sorry I messed up the detail about the necklace, but there's a lot of stuff going on. Josh, what are your thoughts about this movie?
I enjoyed this movie.
Did you really?
You mentioned it to be. I did. You mentioned it to
begin. That pleases me.
Yeah. You mentioned it to begin, and they had sex, and you ran past it really quick because the problem is the movie does not. She says, let's make love, and then it's about 10 minutes of undressing.
Yeah, there's a lot of
that.
And
then later in the movie, maybe it was during the rape scene, they do it again, and it's just slow undressing. This movie loves to slowly make you watch people take off their clothes.
I wonder if that was part of the angle back then. Because keep in mind, there's a decent amount of nudity in this movie for a 1968 film.
Yeah, true.
I mean, it's nothing you couldn't get away with now on basic cable, I think. But still, that was pretty shocking. So maybe they were just stretching it out, delaying it to make it more prurient.
They could have been stretching it out. They could have been delaying it to. Instead, it felt slow at those points.
Yeah, I agree. There is a lot of exposition and a lot of buildup to where we're going. What were the things that you liked best about the movie?
I actually liked the slow buildup of the horror. I like that it's not obvious what's going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously, there's something going on with the Tannis root, but you don't know who is bad, who is good.
And the secret passage that they lay in before, while everything is still happy, you know?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. My favorite scene of the whole movie is when she is in the phone booth and she is trying to call for help, and they just slowly, different people on the outside of the phone booth.
Yeah.
To build this tension of, is that person against her?
Is it? Yeah. I mean, they have a guy that looks from the rear like Dr. Saperstein.
Exactly.
You think she's going to be swept away.
So that's my favorite scene in the movie, is how they build the suspense like that. I enjoy it.
Do you feel as I do? Oh, God, he's such
a
dick.
Guy is the worst. It's unfortunate he's from Baltimore.
Well, I don't think that's really a plot point we need to get into, but yes, I'm sorry for your fair city.
It was mentioned in the movie, and I said that didn't need to be known.
I'm curious, the slow build of all the suspense, and the movie is another long one. I guess it's like 2 hours 10, 2 hours 13. And the first at least hour and 10 minutes is all build up.
Yes.
All build up with no answers. No answers at all.
I love in the laundry room where we meet Terry.
Yeah.
That their conversation is basic, but it's enough for you to be suddenly have feelings and care about this person, Terry. It's just enough there for you to care, and then instantly they kill her.
Really good writing to make her pleasing and just a sympathetic character. And also the fact that she's so sympathetic and speaks so highly of the Castevets, you initially think they're good people. They're creepy, but they're good. They don't have anything evil to hide. I remember when I first really watched this as a grown-up, I said this, and I probably did see it as a kid. But you think, wow, if I'm going to try and find the bad guy, we haven't even met the bad guy yet. But we had met the bad guy up front, and they just sort of tease you with it throughout.
You start to think something's up with them when he's talking about all the places in the world he's been at.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you start to get a little suspicious.
Yeah, and just the weirdness of their home and the way that Ruth Gordon as Mrs. Castevet is just the ultimate Yenta involved in everything. And no one can eat a piece of cake like her. That when they had them for dinner, she's really going at that cake. I think my favorite part of the movie, my favorite scene is probably the reveal. I love the reveal because it's just so surreal and creepy. But the music in the movie.
I love the music. But real quick, the reveal. Yeah. I love how everyone is just sitting there like, let's just play out.
Yeah.
No one's trying to stop her. She's got a big knife in her hand. We'll just let it play out.
She's just relaxing. But and that again, sometimes the way to make a great point in a movie is contrasts. And she's flipping out and losing her mind. And at the beginning, they're all calm. Eventually, they'll yell a bit, but there's good contrast there. The music is by a
guy. Perfect.
Oh, it is. I'm trying to find the name of the guy. I jotted it down. It is so... This lullaby, and actually this is Mia Farrow singing it, it really sets the mood. And then that music we played in the reveal is almost otherworldly. It doesn't sound natural. That weird noise when she first sees the child, it's another horrifying music cue. I really, really love the music in this. It never, ever gets in the way. It only...
Lullaby is so creepy.
Yeah. Oh, it's written by a guy named Christopher Comita. And I think that there are certain things that when people put in movies, it makes things scarier because they are sort of above being a topic of a horror movie. They're almost protected in our mind. Babies. I don't like babies in horror movies. I don't like when a pregnant woman or a woman who is not able to defend herself is being harassed and used. That's horrifying. Old people. I don't want to see old people be a part of a horror film. And this movie touches on all these things.
Yeah.
And I think that leads to just an overall creepiness. And even the look of the film, it's definitely a gritty look at 1970s, or at this point, 1968. But like 1970s New York, the film has that grain that looks like a film from New York. And New York is captured not apologetically at all. It looks gritty. It looks like a dirty city.
Good, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
My first note that's written down at the top of my paper says, wallpapering used to be a real pain. Why did anyone wallpaper?
I know.
And I forget about the whole, you have to put the paste on the wall and all that. And we've all done it, but I forget about it. And then to see it come back in a movie like this, I'm like...
And don't forget you have to line up the patterns
for
the left and the right, which is also horrible. The movie opens up, I guess... The happiest part is when they are a young couple looking for the apartment and they find out it's a great apartment. But even then, it's got a sense of foreboding to it. The whole movie, and maybe it's because they start with the music that is so creepy.
I think it's that guy is just a jerk the entire time.
Yeah. And you don't, and you really, you're sympathetic for Rosemary. She's so sweet and pretty before she gets all messed up. And just, almost, you know, like a delightful, perfect wife. Yes. Why was she sucked into this relationship with this self-centered guy?
Well, that's why she is so excited when he says, let's have a baby. Because she's been wanting that, but he's too selfish to do it. Finally, he came around.
Now, the dream sequences, there's a couple of them.
Yeah.
And a couple things in them, it's really, for me, hard to capture, like, a surreal flavor. Because if it's on film... It's real. It's not something in your imagination that you have to create. He does such a good job. Roman Polanski does such a good job of making the dream sequences surreal and overlapping. And also, and even actually in the reveal scene, great uses of silence.
Yeah. It's a stupid comparison.
Okay. But that's okay.
But it reminded me, no, it's a really stupid comparison.
Okay.
But the dream sequence, how it flips between and how it gets you all almost like dizzy.
Right.
Reminded me of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when they go through that tunnel.
I can see that.
And everything starts flashing. And it, different feels, but the same thing of just disorientation through this dream.
Almost like, like dizzying, like a vertigo type feeling.
And the flashing in and out of her husband on top of her.
Yes.
Versus other things going on.
Right.
Brings that whole like in and out of consciousness. It was really well done.
And the way it messes with your mind, you're thinking, is this real? She's not on a boat. She's obviously not on a boat, but she's surrounded by people that are familiar on the boat. So you have to figure out what's going on. And I think they do a pretty satisfying job for laying as much mystery down as they do in the front of the film for paying it off. They don't leave a lot of things like up to your imagination, which is great.
The hairy Satan hands I could have done without.
Yeah, I'm with you, but...
But I know it's to reference the scratches later.
Exactly. I also think that the way they turn Rosemary from the young bride at the front to looking like gaunt and haggard and tired.
Very pale.
So subtly done, but so effective. And not like over-the-top makeup, just she looks like she's not well. And I will say that I think the whole cast, even though you hate John Cassavetes as Guy, he's well cast. It's easy to hate him because he's really good at it.
No, from the first time he's on scene, you know she's too good for this guy.
Yeah, agreed. And I think the Castevets are perfectly cast, creepy, sort of old school New York dandy types with their weird. You can almost smell their apartment when you go in.
They were creepy, but not out of place. Which is a tough balance.
Mm-hmm. They do a great job with that. And then there's just weird cameos in the movie. It's sort of like when you're watching this horror movie and you see her name is, I think, Hope Summers. But she played Clara, the neighbor on the Andy Griffith Show.
Okay.
And she is one of the Satanic Coven. And to see someone from Mayberry scream Hail Satan is a bit off-putting. Also, one of my favorite character actors, Phil Leeds, is in it. You would know him if you saw his picture. And we were talking about William Castle. And I won't get into it. I want to save the William Castle stuff for the second part of this episode. Okay. But he was the guy that turns around at the phone booth, the producer of the movie.
Okay.
That's the guy that you think is Saperstein.
I love that scene.
Yeah, it's great. It is so tense.
I love how they build up with the saying, oh, well, she's just, you're crazy because you're pregnant.
Right.
And they build up like the, is this real? Is this not real the entire time?
Yeah. And that is so great because you want to empathize with her, but what she's seeing is so nutty that maybe it's not true. And I think we even referenced this at the front of the show. There's not really a jump scare in the entire movie.
No, there's none.
It's a little off-putting when you see Satan in that sequence in the dream, but
it's not a jump. It's just a flash.
It is just a flash. And I think that's one of the reasons why it stays so effective, because it's just a building tension. One thing I hadn't noticed until I watched it this time, the baby's due date is June 6, 1966, which anyway you slice it is 666. I just thought that was pretty clever. And another thing they do when you start to really feel that what she's seeing is real and it's not going to be just the fact that she's losing her common sense because she's pregnant, is she can't trust anybody. And that's so scary. Even the doctor she thought she could trust turns her in. And the circle within her apartment. I mean, her husband's a jackass.
That's the problem with New York City.
Yeah. Do you think that's
full
the
Satan
problem?
Satan worshippers.
That's okay. Also, I think that one of the other great things about the movie is the comedy elements in it. Ruth Gordon's character, even at the scariest reveal at the end when she's talking about, he chose you. Of all the women in the world, he chose you. She is just funny in everything she does, even when she's super annoying. She shows up at the wrong time. She goes through their mail, all of that. And I think, again, we're talking about contrast. Little bits of funny make the scary scarier, I think. And it's not like because the whole thing, the whole movie is almost like going up the first lift on a roller coaster, because it gets more and more intense with no relief for the plot as far as it goes.
Right. The whole suspense, the entire thing is this real or is this in her imagination?
Mm-hmm.
And you go along for that ride the entire time. That's what builds it up.
I don't lose that. I stay with it. And if you were to just tell, and you probably, folks, if you're listening still, when I did the recap of the plot, it's a pretty outlandish, far-fetched plot. But it is introduced in drips and draps, just little bits at a time. And so you buy into it because it gets more and more far-fetched as you go. It's not thrown at you that she's living in a satanic building. You have to get all of that in pieces. And I think that helps you buy into the suspension of disbelief. Anything else that you liked about the movie in particular?
No, I think that's a good recap of the highlights of the movie.
Now, I'm sure you probably have some problems with it, as
always.
Do I. Yes. So we will take a short break. I will come back. We'll talk about William Castle and the things we would have changed about Rosemary's Baby on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks.
As the weather cools down and we spend more evenings indoors, your home should feel like a sanctuary. Avocado helps you create a natural oasis with organic mattresses, cozy pillows, soft bedding, and thoughtfully designed furniture. Avocado products are carefully constructed with premium materials that are better for you and the planet. Certified organic mattresses, pillows, bedding, and sustainably sourced wood furniture make it easy to transform your home into a restorative retreat. Avocado uses premium materials and expert craftsmanship, so their products are designed to last. They deliver lasting comfort and better value over time. Better materials and thoughtful design lead to better, deeper sleep. And quality rest impacts every part of your life. Invest in your comfort. Every product is thoughtfully made with the planet in mind, so you can feel good about the comfort and quality that you bring into your home. Plus, they offer easy financing options with Affirm to make your purchase easy. Avocado, dream of better. It's better for you and better for the planet. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com today to create your natural oasis.
All right, we are back. I mentioned in the first segment that the guy who did the phone booth cameo was William Castle.
Yeah, tell
now,
me about him.
Okay, he was not as much of a well-regarded filmmaker as he was a showman. Or showman, as you might say. His biography, which I have read, is called Step Up America, I'm Going to Scare the Pants Off You. That's the kind of thing he was about. I have framed posters from his movies in my basement. I'm a huge fan. He made 13 Frightened Girls I have over there, Mr. Sardonicus, just all of these sort of schlocky films, and he was big on gimmicks. Have you ever heard of a movie called The Tingler?
I do not know The Tingler. I am creeped out by just the name of The Tingler.
Okay,
it sounds like a horrible
The plot of The Tingler is that when you get sort of chills going up your spine when you're scared,
okay,
it's because your spine is alive.
Okay,
because it's scared. You can subdue it by screaming. So, you know, if you scream, it goes away.
Does the Batman fight The Tingler?
No, but what's even better than this is that it's Vincent Price. And he says, well, how can I capture the Tingler if anyone can scream and defeat it? He finds a deaf-mute woman and scares her to death. She can't scream, so the Tingler is out walking around. But the gimmick of this movie, and he always had a gimmick, was the fact that he had buzzers under the seats of the movie theater that would vibrate the seats at scary moments.
I love that.
Okay, here he is explaining it. Here is the great William Castle.
I am William Castle,
yes,
director of the motion picture you're about to see. I feel obligated to warn you that some of the sensations, some of the physical reactions, which the actors on the screen will feel, will also be experienced for the first time in motion picture history by certain members of this audience.
Because there's buzzers in the seats.
And only on certain members. So he couldn't afford buzzers for all the seats.
And it had to do with the people that owned the theater. Because my father actually had, his grandfather owned a theater that was allied with Columbia Pictures. And they got the buzzers and they only put in like four or five of them. Because they're a pain in the ass.
Well, and who had, did someone have to sit there during the movie and trigger them?
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't have done manually or automatic.
There were, and you can probably tell from that little piece of footage, the way he comes out on the blank screen.
Yes.
He fancies himself sort of like an Alfred Hitchcock type.
That's the first thing I thought of was Hitchcock.
But he's not as classy of a filmmaker. Some of his other gimmicks, he had something called, the buzzing seat was called Percepto. He also had Emergo, which was a movie, a 3D movie, but at the very end, a skeleton that was hidden in a box beside the screen would literally fly over the crowd. And that was called Emergo.
This guy would have loved living in 2025.
Oh, he would have. He also did a movie called 13 Ghosts, where if you were too scared to see the ghosts, you were given a ghost viewer. And if you looked through the blue, you did not see the ghosts. But if you looked through the red, you would see the ghosts. I might have that backwards, but
that
you could
choose
that.
That is fun as well. I like now, the creativity of this guy.
The best one is for the movie Mr. Sardonicus, where at the end of the movie, you had to vote whether or not he was guilty. And because of this, and my father remembers handing out these phosphorescent thumbs, and someone at the end of the movie, they would run the reel of William Castle coming back saying, does he deserve mercy or should he be put to death? And you would vote with the thumbs up or down. But the thing is he only filmed one ending because he knew everyone would want to see Sardonicus be punished. So that's the kind of stuff he did.
So it didn't matter. It was always, yeah, we're going to.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think about it, if you're only looking at the back of a phosphorescent thumb, you can't tell who's voting for what. His one, before Rosemary's Baby, probably the highlight of his career, was a very scary movie called Homicidal. This gimmick was, it had a fright break that before the climax of the film, he stopped the movie down for 60 seconds and talked about the fright break, and you could leave the theater, but if you did, you had to sit in Coward's Corner, which was set up in the lobby, and people would see you as you left. But Homicidal, everyone agrees, it was the inspiration for Psycho, which is pretty amazing. Here's a little bit of the trailer for Homicidal.
The almost paralyzing shock of Homicidal.
And of course, he's in the trailer. It's the breathless suspense of a psychotic urge to kill. There he is.
If homicide is your hobby, may I recommend a surgical knife for a nice, clean, quiet murder?
He was just a showman.
Was he really in a wheelchair, or was that for
That's a plot point from the movie, The Homicidal.
All right, was there a gimmick for Rosemary's Baby?
He wanted a gimmick, and
gets raped by Satan on the way out.
No, not everybody. No, he was. I mean, the fact that he made these schlocky movies that are really kind of fun to watch nowadays, it's all based on the fact that he understood the crowds. He's very successful because the way he promoted his films. When he first read the novel,
he's a little bit of a carny.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And when he first read the novel by Ira Levin, he said, this is a great horror movie. And it was before it had even gotten very famous. It wasn't even at the top of the charts yet. William Castle went out and bought the rights to the book. And once the book became very popular, all the studios were bidding on it. But he had it. So what he said is he would sell it to Paramount as long as he could be the producer. And he made a lot of money off this movie. He did say that it was a cursed set because of Roman Polanski's involvement in the Sharon Tate murder, and also that William Castle got a bad urinary tract infection on the set. So he blamed that, and he went into sort of seclusion after that.
But they didn't know about the murder during this movie, did they?
No. It came later. He just thought it was a cursed set. The thing that he wanted to do, and it's something you brought up, he was all about the reveal of the baby, and he wanted to build a horrifying baby to show in it. And Roman Polanski told him, he said, no matter what you do, it's not going to be as scary as what people imagine.
No.
And, you know, he was a showman. He wanted to show it, and they held really strong on that. They said, no, we're not going to show the baby. And he said, okay, whatever, we're not going to show the baby. And I think because of that, that's one of the reasons the movie holds up.
Right.
Because the horror inside your mind is so much better.
Right. No. If to show the baby, it'd have to be like the baby jumps up and grabs a knife and kills her, and then the movie ends.
Yeah, but I'm not buying it.
That would not last. That would be a quick scare.
Right.
And you wouldn't buy it, and then it would not hold up. Not showing the baby, really smart move.
Now, also, you brought it up, and I was going to bring this up as well. Because there is very little resolution at the end of the movie.
Oh, it's one of the things I don't like.
Really? Okay, why don't you like
that? The end of the end. because there is no resolution. It's just, it leaves us with this whole moral, like, do you kill the baby?
Right.
Do you raise the baby?
Mm-hmm.
Do you just let these weird devil worshipers be?
Yeah, it is. There are no questions answered at all. All the questions early in the movie are answered, but the end is up in the air. I'm going to say that I kind of like the ending because it leaves it unresolved. And because of that, you don't have closure and you leave the theater or leave the movie.
That's the problem. There's no closure. There's no justice. Like, she has been screwed with for a year by all these people. And it's like, okay.
But you leave the theater with no resolution. It's still scary in your head. What's going on?
No, it is still scary. Yeah.
Also, some other thoughts that I had is that, well, it's always bothered me that the name Cassavet is too much like Cassavetes, who played Guy. So I think they should have chosen a different name. They're just too close. Do you think that Rosemary accepts the involvement of the Cassavetes too fast?
No, because they don't know anyone else there. They're new to the building.
Okay.
It's like this friendly new neighbor. So I completely bought into that. The Guy turn, where Guy does not want to go over there, and suddenly he's the most fascinating guy in the world.
Yeah, he loves him.
Was a little much, a little tight.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that be a little more spread out, and also see what Roman said to Guy that got him intrigued. Because it couldn't just lead off with, hey, you know what? If you sell me your soul, I'm going to make you a famous actor. There had to be a process.
Right. How did Guy get involved? Because we know he wasn't before involved because he's a failure.
Now, I have a question. Were you bothered by product placement?
I do not remember any product placement standing out to me.
It drove me crazy. At one point when Guy comes in, he opens a brand new carton of Pall Mall cigarettes and dumps them out on the table. So Pall Mall was in on it. Scrabble, the game Scrabble, is not only a game they play, but is used
to solve.
Yeah, they solve the crime with it, or the crime, or the mystery. Yamaha is all over it.
Yes.
Because he's a Yamaha commercial. Well, it turns out that Yamaha actually gave Roman Polanski and John Cassavetes motorcycles to ride during the movie. So they kind of paid for it with that.
Right.
The Time Life building. Time Life is mentioned 3 or 4 times, and there is a cover of Time magazine shown.
But they thought that would be around forever.
I guess. But I mean, they could have said a different building. They could have used a fake magazine.
They could have.
And also, at the very, very end, after she's seen the child and she's so upset, they offer her not tea, Lipton tea.
Yeah.
Would you like some Lipton tea?
Well, yes. But they was also like, it's just normal Lipton tea, as in what everyone drinks.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're right. There was a lot of product placement.
And that threw me. Again, I wasn't familiar with that. And did you feel that when you saw their building, and I'm getting somewhere with this, it looked like the Only Murders in the Building where they live?
It did. It was the same type of building. Yes.
Well, here it is that the building they used for this is a building I've actually visited in New York City, the Dakota. And when they go into that big arch to see their apartment,
right,
that's the exact spot where John Lennon was shot, because he lived in the Dakota. But Only Murders in the Building is also based on the Dakota and the fact that they had a lot of famous people living there. And they mentioned that in this movie as well, that the Bramford has celebrities and actors living in it. And the Bramford was named, it turns out, for Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula. So there's that.
Right.
Any other things that drove you crazy?
Yeah. I don't like how they treat Rosemary at all in this movie.
I don't either.
From the very beginning, they put her down as she's like this woman and Guy's the man and Guy makes these decisions. And then the entire movie is just gaslighting her to being like, you're crazy. So I don't like how they treat her at all. I don't think it was a product of the time. I think it was a focus of the movie to show like this is to build up the bad energy.
It is sort of a cerebral horror movie in that way, because again, first time through, you don't know what's true and what isn't. And the fact that she's being messed with is really psychologically disturbing, because, you know, they're supposed to be a happy couple. They have sex all the time. Yeah. They sewed this in the beginning.
They make love.
Yes, they do make love. Now, when you heard that the doctor was named Abe Saperstein, did that ring any bells in speaking of sports, in your speaking of sports mind?
No, I knew someone named Sean Saperstein at one point, so that's where my mind went.
Abe Saperstein is the guy that founded and owned the Harlem Globetrotters. Now, it seems awfully coincidental that you would choose the exact name for the doctor, but that is an odd coincidence.
It's a great name for an evil doctor.
It is, absolutely. And that's Ralph Bellamy, and he is super evil.
And I'll tell you, I like that. I know we're talking about things we don't like right now, but I left off on things I like is the tennis, that they keep going back to this tennis route.
Yeah.
And that it's not a real thing. They made it up.
I love that they did that.
So I love that they made it up. So it's not like, that could never happen with cinnamon or something. It's, you know, they made something up.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one more thing I don't like about this is there is so much evil and like that it's all one-sided. There's no God presence. It's like all Satan, and Satan's coming to conquer the world, and Satan. Instead of like when you get other movies, you normally see both sides.
Yeah.
And there was no contrast there.
I agree. And they even sort of go out of the way to sort of diss the Pope and talk about religion in almost a negative flavor. The Pope had been visiting New York in the scene, and they say, oh, you don't have to think anything of him. He's just a man. Think of the money they spend on robes and jewels.
Right.
You know, it sort of flirts with an anti-religion. I mean, of course, a movie about Satan is going to be anti-religious.
But I also love the whole evil is just all around us.
Yeah.
These people all have, your doctor's evil. Your neighbor is evil. The lady taking care of your baby is evil. They're all evil.
And also, I didn't buy the fact that a New York City apartment would have a working fireplace. Why don't I buy that. Because it's an apartment building. How many chimneys would you have to have? I would think they would have replaced it by a gas something. I don't know. It just seems...
Can't have a shared chimney?
Maybe. But I mean, that's a pretty dynamite apartment with the fireplace.
Well,
it's
also
huge.
This is where celebrities live.
Okay.
And so also, you got to remember, this is before central heat and air.
That's true. No, it's not. They had air conditioning in 1968. Yes, of course. And send heat, everything. One thing that I found fascinating is when they were wooing Mia Farrow to be in this movie, they sent her the script. Now, at the time, do you know who she was married to?
No.
Frank Sinatra. Quite a big age difference there. But that was Frank's wife at the time. And he read the script and closed it and gave it to Mia Farrow and said, I don't see you in this. But with Frank, you need to listen to little things like that. She took the role anyway. The movie went way past schedule. She was supposed to be in a movie with Sinatra called The Detective. And he got so pissed that she was paying attention to this movie, he actually had divorce papers served to her on set. So that's another reason she's probably out of her mind when she's making this movie.
Another reason for this movie to be cursed.
Exactly. But here's something to think about. She is a Nepo baby, Mia Farrow. Her mother is Maureen O'Sullivan, who probably best known for playing Jane in the original Tarzan movies. But in the 1940s, she was linked with Frank Sinatra, which means that Frank could have been with the mother and the daughter. And that is as scary as anything in Rosemary's Baby. So that to me just blows my mind. I can't do that. I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah, we had I don't even want to conceptualize that. That is definitely a movie of its own.
That is. And also the artwork, another thing I noticed that I hadn't noticed before, I have the Criterion edition of this. It's just a beautiful transfer. But if you look closely at the baby carriage in it, looks like a Pac-Man.
Oh, but I don't like the... Is that a baby? Is that they showing the baby? Oh, no, that's me.
No, that's Mia Farrow and then the baby carriage up on a mountain. Yeah, but it looks like a Pac-Man.
Yeah, so maybe some old style.
Some designs. So any closing thoughts before we close the book on Rosemary's Baby?
No, I think we're good. I think we covered everything for this movie.
All right. So I must ask you, out of a possible 10, how many, charms filled with Tannis root do you give it?
How many evil dead eyes?
Yeah. How many Scrabble games? How many pieces
Harry
of chicken
Satan
liver?
Arms?
How many
claw marks?
Eyes? Exactly. How many do you give it?
Second week in a row, I'm going with a 7.
Really?
I enjoyed this movie. I think I can see other people giving it a lot higher. I am happy. Well, I guess I should have asked you this earlier. They haven't tried to remake this movie, right?
No, they did a couple sequels that were ill-advised.
All right. I was going to say...
No, they did. They did remake it as a miniseries on TV, and it was horrible.
I was going to say, you can't remake this because it would be bad. Yeah. And I like the way this stands alone. This music's so creepy.
It is. It's really rough.
So I'm giving it a 7. I enjoyed it. And I'd recommend, if you haven't seen it, give it a try.
I would agree with you on 7, but I'm going to bump it up to 7.5 because it is such a great capture of that time in New York. And it's weird because it's 1968, but the movie is set 3 years earlier. But it really just feels like you are in that time. The flavor of it is great. So I give it 7.5 was where I give it. And I also hold in my hand our movie for next week. Hicks, Nick, Sticks,
Picks. Oh, I thought you were going to say a can of red paint.
No, I don't have red paint. I'm sorry. But it's spooky season, so let's see what we have for week 6. This is exciting, isn't it?
Fingers crossed it's color.
Not going to be color, I don't think, but we'll see. Next week's movie is, indeed, in black and white. Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein from 1948. Now, this is a comedy film.
I was going to say, is this, you're putting in a comedy for spooky season?
But it has Frankenstein. It has Dracula. Well, the Frankenstein's monster. It has Dracula. It has the Wolfman. It has the Invisible Man. It has all of the great Universal monsters in a very palatable, short, black and white film for you, Josh, that will make you laugh.
Does it have the baseball team?
It does not have the baseball team. But, you know, strange as it may seem, baseball players have very peculiar names.
Well, that's all I know about Abbott and Costello.
Have you seen them at the, did you see the film of them performing Who's on First that they have at the Hall of Fame?
Yeah,
I've seen that. On a loop, right? It's just, they run it all the time.
I don't know about it at the Hall of Fame, but I've seen it.
Yeah, it's great. They are great. But this movie is my favorite by them. Also, Robert's favorite movie growing up for a long time. And he said, what movie are you going to do next week? And I said, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. He said, if you need someone to come in and offer counterpoint, he would do it.
Counterpoint because he likes it?
Yeah. Well, just he wants to comment on it. He loves the movie.
Well,
but
maybe
for
we should
someone,
discuss that.
Yeah. And I think also, without, you know, letting too much go, it's the grandfather of all funny, scary movies like Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters would not exist if not for this kind of movie in the 40s. But I look forward to getting your take on it. We will be back next week.
We can stream it for $3.99 on most streaming services.
Yeah.
Or Thursday, tomorrow morning at 6:45 a.m., it will show on the Sundance Channel.
You're kidding.
That's what it says.
But, you know, sadly, we won't be released in time for people to catch it on the Sundance Channel.
Unfortunately,
you
guys have missed it. You'll have to do another check or pay the $3.99 like I will be doing.
I think it might also be on YouTube if you poke around. But just take a look. This movie never disappoints. It's a fine film, and we will talk about it next week as we continue spooky season on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. Josh, thank you. I loved talking about this one with you.
Hail Adrian.
He will be stronger than strong. He will live longer than long. He is Adrian. And you know what? It's not the same Adrian from Rocky. It's a different baby. Just so you know.
Too bad.
But if Sylvester Stallone
would have been a nice storyline.
If he were to worship Satan, he could say, yo, Adrian.
Yeah. I mean, there's a sex change and stuff that's needed between movies, but
yeah. Well, we'll make it happen. I think that would be fun.
So show her with some red eyes would be a nice flashback.
I love it. I love it. I love it. We'll be back next week with another fun-filled episode of Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. Less William Castle next week, I promise. But I did like discussing him. Josh, thank you very much.
We'll see you next week.
Talk to you then.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka.